Thanks for having me. I've been having a good time here so far. So I'd like to start not with the thing that I sort of wrote in the title and abstract. Well, it depends on which one you saw, but I'd like to start sort of with this other problem, which is a current work in progress. Oracle. Right, so I guess the title is going to be this plus equivariant localization and a T.S. Siegel completion. So this talk kind of is going to have two parts to it. In the first part, I would like to talk about this problem, which is currently, so this first part is going to be a joint work with David's Ben-Zvi, Helm, Nadler. The Davids, usually,
yeah.
Right. And then the second part is my own work. So, and maybe I'll just pull out a plan very quickly. So the first is I would like to review the Ling Langlands and talk about categorification. So precisely, what we mean when we say we want to categorify it, and then I'd like to talk about Hochschild homology. And their geometric avatar loop spaces. And then I'll talk about these two results, so equivariant localization, and then a T.S. Siegel completion. Okay, so that's the plan. And I should just say it right off the bat. So for me, if I write K, I just mean the complex numbers. I might write K out of habit, but I'm only going to consider the complex numbers. Okay, so let me first start by reviewing what the Deligne-Langlands conjecture says. So the problem that the Deligne-Langlands conjecture sort of proposes to solve is to classify irreducible representations. So finite dimensional irreducible representations of an algebra called affine Heck algebra. And while I'm not going to define what this algebra is in terms of generators and relations, but let me just say two things about it. So the affine Heck algebra, so you can think about it in two ways. So the affine Heck algebra is a deformation over a formal invertible parameter of the group algebra of the extended affine vowel group. So that's the semi-direct product of the vowel group of a reductive group G with a co-character lattice of a torus. Or you can also think of it as the following way, which is if I specialize it, then this is an Iwahori-Heck algebra. Which you can think of as this sort of, for example, it sort of controls the representation theory of sort of reps of the Langlands dual group with coefficients in some local field like QP with that contained at Iwahori fixed vector. Right, so in some sense, it's motivated by a question number theory, but the solution to this problem does not really involve very much number theory at all. So the statement, it's now a theorem due to Ginzburg, Kazdan, Lustig, is that the set of irreducible representations of finite dimension for the affine Heck algebra, so there's a map to some set of tamely ramified. So probably for this to be like strictly true, I need to fix Q to be a prime power, but let me just sort of get away with this. So I'm going to call these tamely ramified Langlands parameters. And let me say explicitly what I mean by that. So what I mean is I want to take a semi-simple element in the group, and I want to take a nilpotent element in the Lie algebra, such that, and also I want to fix a non-zero complex number q on a space such that I require S and N to Q commute. So they should commute up to scaling by Q. So this data we call a Langlands parameter. So in general, this map won't be a bijection. It's a bijection in type A, but otherwise it is not. And the fiber, so in general, it's only surjective. So the fiber, sometimes people call these L packets, denoted like this. So the fiber over some parameter phi should be bijective with the Springer block representations of A of phi. So what I mean by this is the component group of the stabilizer it's a joint stabilizer of S and N. Right, so it's the subgroup that fixes both of these points under conjugation. Yes, thank you. I always forget. Yes, up to conjugacy. Okay, let me give sort of an idea, or let me tell you, or let me say a little bit about the ideas in the proof. Of course, it's not going to be a full proof. So the sort of main players are going to be the Springer resolution. So I'm going to denote the cotangent bundle of the flag variety to be N tilde. This maps down. This is a resolution of singularities of the nilpotent cone. So if you like, the points up here consist of a nilpotent element and a flag. So X is in the nilpotent cone cross G mod B, such that the nilpotent element fixes the flag, or it sends the flag to itself, perhaps. And the second piece of notation I'd like to make right now is we define the Steinberg variety to be the fiber product of the Springer resolution over itself. So this is the Springer. Okay, so the way the proof goes is to construct an isomorphism from the affine Heck algebra into the Grothendieck group of the category of G cross GM coherent sheaves on the Steinberg. So I'm going to write it in a stacky form. But all I'm saying here is that I'm taking G cross GM coherent sheaves on this variety. Okay, so an isomorphism is constructed here, and it's an isomorphism of algebras. So this thing over here has a natural convolution structure, this category. This category is a convolution category which gives an algebra structure on the Grothendieck group. So just sort of saying words, if I have two sheaves on the Steinberg, I can pull them back to the triple fiber product, tensor them, and then integrate along the middle factor. Okay, so then another part of this isomorphism is it's possible to identify the center. So the center of the affine Heck algebra is identified under this isomorphism with coherent sheaves on BG cross BGM, which is just a representation, the category of representations of G cross GM. And this thing has an explicit description. So this is One description looks like this. Right. So in particular, in order to specify central character, is to choose closed point of the affine quotient G mod G cross GM. So then the next step is to sort of figure out what the procedure of sort of specifying a central character on the algebra, what it does on the sort of geometric side. So that part of the story is a covariant localization. Right, so to classify representations of an algebra, it suffices to just sort of classify the representations over every central character. Okay, so what equivariant localization says over here is that, right, so the affine Heck algebra specialized at a point is, so there's sort of two different things I can do. So I'm going to sort of do something slightly different. Instead of specializing it at Z, I'm going to complete it at a closed point. And so what this is going to give me is so this is K theory, the Grothendieck group of coherent sheaves on the Steinberg, completed at a point. So now by equivariant localization, this thing is going to be the K theory of coherent sheaves on the fixed points also completed. And then by some Matthias-Siegel completion theorem, this thing is going to be something like the equivariant Borel-Mohr homology of the fixed points with coefficients in C, right? And then if we specialized instead, we would just sort of forget that any of the equivariance was there. And now the nice thing, right, is we've reduced the problem. We've reduced the problem from a problem in the Grothendieck group to a problem about Borel-Mohr homology. And Borel-Mohr homology, this Borel-Mohr homology has a natural identification. So this uses the sort of six functors, the sort of yoga of six functors and base change to get that this Borel-Mohr homology is isomorphic to the endomorphisms, the derived endomorphisms on the fixed points of the nilpotent cone of the push forward of the fixed point, the push forward of the constant sheaf sort of restricted to the fixed points of the Springer resolution. Right, so the next thing that kind of bails us out is we can use the decomposition theorem. Right, so this push forward So let me forget that covariance for now. So let me just say the story as told by these authors does not involve completion or equivariance. I'm mostly stating it this way to connect it to something I'm going to say later. So I'm going to forget it for now. And then if I forget that, so now I just get a decomposition of this thing into some coefficient vector space tensored with intersection cohomologies with some shifts, where these chi's consist of an orbit in a local system. So a G, a sort of stabilizer of G orbit and a local system on the orbit. And in particular, the endomorphisms so mod a radical, this is just going to be the direct sum of the endomorphism of matrices in these vector spaces. Right? So in particular, you can think of these vector spaces. These vector spaces are exactly the irreducibles of the affine Heck algebra with fixed central character. And you can think of the IC ties as some kind of irreducible character sheaves. So, there's sort of another consequence of having this sort of yoga of six functors, or this way to sort of see things geometrically, is we get a categorification. Right, we realize this algebra is endomorphisms of objects in a category, which means that the category generated by that object is isomorphic to modules over that algebra. So there's natural identification of modules over the Z-specialized affine Heck algebra with the subcategory generated by what I'm going to call the sort of maybe the Q or the Z Springer sheaf. So this is just going to be this push forward. And this is it's a full subcategory of the category perverse sheaves on the Z fixed nilpotent cone. So our goal in this project is to sort of come up with this kind of categorification, but without fixing a central character first.
Right. What?
Yeah.
We use the word verification. Verification
is the
goal up. Sorry. It's important to the level, like from the vector space, you go to category, from the category to the category, and so on.
Right. Yeah, maybe I'm not using.
Right?
Yeah, I'm not using I don't mean categorification in any kind of precise way. I just mean we want a statement like.
I mean, the category of H modules is a category from the very beginning. So,
yeah, right.
You're just saying that's going to some other categories.
Yes.
So, yeah. And then categorify.
Okay. Yes. I guess maybe the right thing to say is we want to lift the statement to a statement on the level of categories rather than categorify some structure. I don't know if that's, anyway. So the idea behind how to do this, right, so the sort of key ingredients we needed in order to do this was sort of this yoga of six functors on something geometric. And sort of unfortunately, there's not really anything like that available to us in K-theory. So the idea for our project is to replace the Grothendieck group with Hochschild homology, which I'll define later, and to replace. So over here, right, the global sections of the way you get Borel-Mohr homology is by taking the global sections of some dualizing sheaf on in the category of perverse sheaves. So we want to replace a category of perverse sheaves with the category of coherent sheaves on some loop space. And this is a derived loop space. So again, I'll define this shortly. I just wanted to get the statement up there. And then given this, well, this is a work in progress sort of claim. Well, the way I'm going to write it, there's not really anything that's not known. But so there is a fully faithful embedding. So so that's what I can't write. So Hochschild homology of the category of coherent sheaves on the Steinberg. So this is equivalent to some subcategory generated. I always set my S's by some coherent Springer sheaf. Which sits inside the category of coherent sheaves. So I should write deco probably to make people happy. So deco with some singular support condition, which we can ignore. So it's this coherent Springer sheaf is going to sit inside the category of bounded derived category of coherent sheaves on this derived loop space.
Yeah. On the left, you have homology,
Sorry, Maud. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, and you know, this thing I wrote maybe is a little mysterious, so let me at least say what the complex points of this stack are, or derived stack. So where sort of the complex points, so if I take this stack, the complex points are given by Q computing nilpotent element, a sort of arbitrary element of G that Q commute. So there's no semi-simplicity condition on the complex points of the stack. And sometimes we'll refer to this as the moduli stack. Yeah, it's a derived stack. But I think the complex points won't be able to see at least the derived structure. But yes, it is a derived stack.
But I mean, by also just this point, the fiber product from the stack of itself or it's square. So
yeah, exactly. It's a self-intersection of the diagonal. So we might call this something like the moduli stack of tamely ramified Langlands parameters. Okay, given that, I'd like to move on to talking about Hochschild homology. I guess our perspective on this problem is that there are two notions of Hochschild homology for a monoidal category and a relationship between them. So let me just sort of say what they are. So let's C be a small DG category. So there's two notions of trace that I'd like to talk about. The first is the vertical trace. So I'm going to refer to this as Hochschild homology. So the way this thing is defined in the usual way, but I have to be a little bit precise here. So where, if A is a DG category, what I mean for something to be an A module, right? So an A module is a functor from a op into chain complexes, into K chain complexes. And sometimes we write this as sort of A hat because this is some kind of end completion. You can think about it that way. Right? So C is naturally a C tensor C op module. So C evaluated at two objects is just Hom in C from Y to X. Okay, and the second kind is a horizontal trace, which I'm just going to call the trace. So here, I really need C to be a monoidal category. So maybe C, comma, O times is a monoidal category. So what this is going to define for us is a map from C, a trace map, into the sort of the trace category of C, which is going to be defined in the same way. But here, so the definition looks the same, but here we're really thinking about if A is a monoidal category, so an A module, we want to think about not A as C as an A module, but maybe as an A module category. So it's going to be It's a category M with an action map satisfying the usual relations, which we need C to be monoidal in order to phrase. Right. So, and there's a relationship between these two. So the observation is that if C is monoidal, right? So because Hochschild homology is also monoidal, then the Hochschild homology of C is an algebra.
Trace, so it's in the monoidal category, and then just
so
the object on the blackboard is the one you call horizontal trace.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Which of the you wrote like number two horizontal trace, but that's never appeared afterwards. So which one?
Yeah. So this is the horizontal trace.
The horizontal trace
is the category, and there's a universal trace functor into it.
Oh, I see. Yeah. You call this horizontal.
Yeah. I guess the idea is somehow this one is a decategorification, and this one doesn't really move. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so if C is monoidal, right? So in order to even phrase this, C had to be monoidal. So if I assume in addition C is monoidal here, then the Hochschild homology is now an algebra, and there's a relationship. So if the sort of trace functor applied to the monoidal unit, this is in C, is compact, then what we have is that endomorphisms in this horizontal trace category of the monoidal unit is just Hochschild homology of the category itself. So in particular, what we get is we get a sort of identification like this, which embeds into the horizontal trace. So let me give some, so now I'd like to talk about just Hochschild homology and give some examples and say how to compute this explicitly. Okay, so for example, so if C is A mod for some DG algebra A, then the Hochschild homology of C is just the Hochschild homology of the DG algebra A. But more generally, there's sort of a nice general formula I can use to compute the Hochschild homology, which is the following. So if S is a generating set for C, right, then the Hochschild homology of the category is I can sum over all objects in my generating set. Right, and then I'm going to draw a simplicial DG algebra, and you take the sum totalization of it. So now I have two objects. Right. And the first map is to, so the first map is going to take some tensor functors and compose them. And the second map is going to compose them in the other direction, right, in the other order. Well, and then you can kind of continue this diagram. On the next level, you have sort of three factors, and you can sort of compose them in three different ways. There's sort of three ways to compose adjacent. So for example, this can be used to compute, right? So for example, in the case of A mod is generated by the free object A, or sorry, A perf, I should say. Did I say A mod or perf? So I should have said perf. And well, you can if the generating set consists of one object, which is A, each of these Hams is just A, and you get the usual cyclic bar complex. But there's you can also sort of use this to compute the Hopf homology of categories that don't possess a single compact generator. So for maybe a very easy example, just take C to be representations of G, where G is reductive. So in this case, well, we can take the generating set to be the irreducible representations of G. And then, well, the Hopf homology of this category is going to be, it's a direct sum of the Hopf homologies of Hams. So we're going to sum over all irreducibles, and then we're going to take Hams, endomorphisms irreducible because there's no Hams between objects in this generating set. And well, this is just direct sum copies of K, and using the Peter Weil theorem, this you can identify this with G invariant functions on G. So what we would like, so the main tool that we use is sometimes it can be hard to like find a generating set and compute all derived endomorphisms between them. So
so formally what's written is not correct, right?
It's not.
You're a direct sum.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
So what we would like is we would like a different way to compute Hopf homology. And in order to do this, I'm going to use a sort of abstract characterization of Hopf homology. So the abstract here, so what it is, what's going to be is going to be the dimension of a dualizable object in the sort of in large infinity categories or DG categories. So let me make a definition. So let's say C is a presentable infinity category stable K-linear, and let's assume it's dualizable. With dual, C check. So then the dimension of C is defined to be the functor from the monoidal unit in this category, which is just K chain complexes. So I want to compose the evaluation, the co-evaluation, with the evaluation. I get a functor from chain complexes, K chain complexes, and I define the Hopf homology to be the evaluation of this functor at the one-dimensional vector space. Something that's nonsense. So this is the dimension of C evaluated at K. So it's a theorem that Lurie proved in higher algebra that the space of dualizing structures on a given dualizable category is contractible. So this is a result by Lurie. The space of duals of any given category is either empty or contractible. Which means that I'm sort of allowed to choose any dualizing structure I want, compute Hopf homology with it, and well, the two complexes I have to be quasi-isomorphic in some way, even if I maybe don't write down exactly the quasi-isomorphism that relates them. Right. So, for example, one way we can do this, we can sort of do it the algebraic way, which is the way over here. So, if C is now a small DG category, then the incompletion or C mod is a presentable category. With dual, C op, the completion of C op. So, and if you sort of unwind what the co-evaluation and the evaluation are, so the Hopf homology of C is going to be K So then the co-evaluation is going to be, well, we can use, so the sort of the main results for computing this are in TOA and Morita, DG Morita theory. But so the co-evaluation is going to be given by a bimodule. It's going to be a K tensor C tensor C up bimodule, which is C. And then we think of this as a C tensor C up bimodule. So, and then the evaluation is also going to be given by C. And if you just sort of cancel the K's, this is exactly the Hodge homology that we defined in the first place. On the other hand, there's a way, if my category is geometric enough, there's another sort of way I can think of it. Think of the dual. So if C is geometric, then say IE, so for example, let's take C to be, I'm getting mixed up between small and large categories. So let me just work with large categories. So if the large category version is if C is the quasi-coherent sheaves on X, where X is like a global quotient stack in characteristic zero, then C dual is also Qco of X, and C tensor C dual is quasi-coherent sheaves on the product. So this is a sort of theorem by Ben-Zvi, Francis, and Nadler. In this case, what is the what are the co-evaluations and the evaluations? Well, what they should be is some composition of maps like this. And so what is this functor? Let me just write the symbols and then I'll draw the diagram. So this one's going to be a pull and a push, and this one's going to be a pull. Right. So these functors, these co-evaluation and evaluation functors, can be given geometrically by the following diagram, which is okay. So I'm gonna write a symbol here. So the P is going to be the map from X to a point. Delta is going to be the diagonal. Right. So the co-evaluation is gotten just by pulling back and then pushing forward. So it's just the diagonal sheaf on X cross X, which is the identity, the integral kernel corresponding to the identity. And evaluation is just going to be the dual of that functor, which is to pull along delta and push along P. In particular, right. So in particular, if you can do a base change. So in derived algebraic geometry, you can take a derived fiber product, and you always have base change along such a diagram. So doing this push pull is the same as pulling all the way up and then pushing all the way forward. Right. So the conclusion is that Hochschild homology, the category perfect complexes on X, is just functions. So it's global sections on the loop space of functions on the loop space, with the structure sheaf, and sometimes I'll just write this as O of Lx. So you can do a similar thing with Schrieck functors, and using Schrieck-based change, and you get that this is something like distributions on Lx, for if I input the category of coherent sheaves. So I wrote L, so I didn't really define, say what the why this thing should be a loop space, so let me define it now. The derived loop space of a sort of stack X is, so it's the derived mapping stack from S1 to X. And one way you can sort of get a more concrete realization of this is to sort of write S1 as the suspension of S0. And then you can sort of, if you believe a universal property that sort of derived mapping stack should take co-products in the source, the products outside, then what this is saying is that this is x crossed over cross x over sort of, well, s naught is 2 points, so it's x cross x. So this is the self-intersection of the diagonal. So let me, I'll give two examples of this.
Right, can I ask
yeah,
a question?
Sure, yeah.
So if you can ask if x is smooth,
right.
And the intersection of the same is perfect, and then, so why is it obvious that global sections of O are the same as global sections of omega?
Right, so I think, yeah, that's, so, I mean, if you believe HKR, right, it's, if x is smooth, it's something like.
This is just smooth variety, so.
Right, so I guess, so it is true that they're isomorphic. And, well, the sentence
is.
Like something, it's something like Lx, if x is smooth, then the derived loop space is derived Calabi-Yau or something. But this is like.
Oh, sorry, it's omega of Lx.
Yeah, omega of Lx.
Okay, sorry, yeah, okay. Right.
Yeah. So, but it's also a calculation you can kind of do. Right, so for example, if x is, say, a smooth affine scheme, it's probably not really necessary to say affine, but I'm just going to do it. So then the loop space is the self-intersection of the diagonal. Well, this is, it's affine, so I can compute fiber products sort of on rings. So this is going to be the spectrum of A tensored over two copies of A with A. And if you sort of, well, this is a derived fiber tensor product. And so one canonical way to identify this is to use the cyclic bar complex. And the multiplication should be given by the shuffle product. And if you like, there's an HKR isomorphism between this and the relative spec, the relative sim of the shifted cotangent complex. So in this case, since it's smooth, I guess I'll just write omega 1 of x shifted into degree negative 1 with no differential. OK, so the other example is if x is a quotient stack. So you can compute the derived loop space using a derived fiber product as follows. So it's going to be, let me just write the diagram. So the bottom map's just going to be the diagonal. So it's not the diagonal of the stack, it's the diagonal of the scheme, right? G equivariantly. And then this map's going to be the action map on one factor and the projection on the other factor. So it's the derived fiber product along this diagram. So in particular, the classical points of the derived loop space is just, this is just going to be the inertia stack of x mod g. And well, okay. So in particular, and the c points are given by pairs. So g in complex points of the group, x in the complex points of the scheme such that G fixes X. So a little short on time, so I'm going to skip. Some things, and we'll just sort of start talking about equivariant localization. OK, so before I talk about covariant localization, let me just make two quick definitions and not really justify them. So the experts might know what these things are. But so I'm going to define the negative cyclic homology of a category. So the statement is that the Hochschild homology has a natural S1 action. And the negative cyclic homology is going to be the Hochschild homology. After I take S1 invariants. And the cyclic homology will be the co-invariance. And then the periodic cyclic homology will be the negative cyclic homology, which is naturally an algebra over the cohomology of BS1, and I'm just going to invert the first Chern class. Okay, so I need to make a few definitions in order to phrase the sort of geometric equivariant localization. So this is, so I guess the takeaway from all this is somehow that loop spaces, I like to think of loop spaces as the geometric avatar of Hochschild homology. Right? So Hochschild homology comes from taking global sections of a sheaf on the loop space. So where before, you know, we phrase equivariant localization in terms of some invariant, now we expect, well, what we'll see is that there you can see how equivariant localization works on the level of geometry. So let me make some definitions. So the derived fixed points are, so let's say G is acting on X and Z is some element in the group. The derived fixed points are going to be given by, I'm just going to write this as X superscript Z, which is the diagonal intersect the graph of Z in X cross X. But of course, this has to be a derived intersection. The classical fixed points, I'm just going to write as pi naught of xz. So this is also the same thing where I don't take derived intersections. I just take the scheme theoretic intersection. And then there's a sort of new notion of fixed points, which I don't really have a name for, but I'm just going to call them new fixed points. And I'm going to denote this as xz with a circle. And let me define this later. So I'll list some properties of it. And I'll sort of give some examples. But it's not guaranteed to, I mean, we don't know that such a thing exists. But let me continue to make some definitions. So note.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to define a new notion of fixed points in a minute. But I'll list out some of its properties, but I don't know that it exists in general.
Am I talking about just usual group actions, not like derived group
action? Yeah, just like a usual.
No.
So let's just say this is like a classical scheme and reduct. Yeah. Okay, so note. So let's take the loop space lives over the loop space of BG, which is the adjoint quotient G mod G. So the Z formal loops are going to be given by the following fiber product. So I'm going to denote it as Z hat Z sub Z. So if I take the G orbit of Z, so let me assume Z is semi-simple. And then I can complete the loop space along this orbit. And let me define the Z unipotent group loops as follows. So I'm going to run out of space, so let me do it over here. So the Z unipotent loops are given by similar fiber product or completion. So this maps on the G mod G. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to map all the way down to the affine quotient. So let me assume here that also G is reductive. So it's going to map all the way down to here. And what I want to do is complete at the sort of saturation of Z. So this is going to be, so what I have here is G dot, the orbit on this following set. So this is for U in the sort of centralizer of G. Right, so So it's sort of Z with all the unipotents that commute with it. So I sort of add the unipotent cone around Z. So I want to complete along this locus. Okay, so then so let me take, if y is any closed subscheme of x, say gz closed, then I can define maps. So the first one is the following. So I just take the loop space of the closed immersion. So that's going to be x mod g z. So this is the stabilizer of z. And then I can map this to the loop space of x mod g. So I'm going to just give some notation for this. This is lz. And then I have l hat z, which is going to be, I just complete everything at z formal loops. And then I have l unipotent z, which is I complete at unipotent loops. So let me make a definition. We say that a pair xg, where g with g acting on x, has the localization property, or the equi, well, let me just write, has property lg. So I'm going to say in words, this is the equivariant localization property if for every semi-simple z and g, the map L, the unipotent map I defined over there, is an equivalence. For y equals some scheme, which this is which is x, whoops, which is this sort of new notion of fixed points. Okay, so for some, this is some scheme.
Yeah, so the condition that exists y, so that.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So sorry, the sentence is a little garbled.
Which might in principle be non-unique.
Right. So it might be non-unique, but it turns out that it is. So if this thing exists, let me list some of its properties. It's unique. It's functorial, meaning if I have a map of two schemes here, there's an induced map. And also, its classical scheme, underlying classical schemes, is just the classical fixed points. And the loop space of this thing is the derived fixed points. So these, it has these four properties. So it somehow like sits in between the classical fixed points and the loop space of, sits somehow in between the classical fixed points and the derived fixed points. Okay.
So the real issue is that you want to write the derived fixed points as loop space of sum.
Yeah, more or less. Or that's like, yeah. So, the theorem then is that the following have a property. So if x is smooth, well, first let me assume g is reductive. So if x is smooth, then x, this new fixed point scheme is just going to be the classical fixed points. And then if x, if we take x, y, and w to be smooth, then the fiber product has also a notion of this, these fixed points, which is just the fiber product of the classical fixed points. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, everything should have a G action and maps should be equivariant.
Yes. And this is Z semi-simple still, or is Z is arbitrary?
Z is always semi-simple.
Yeah. Always.
Always semi-simple.
But then if I smooth them, it's just saying that, I mean, the derived fixed points are just the same as quadratic.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. Okay, and then, well, one thing to point out is this thing doesn't have to be a classical stack. That thing can have derived structure. So one corollary of this, am I out of time?
No, nobody else needs this room right afterwards, so it's now fresh.
Okay, well, maybe I should set a time limit for myself so I don't overstay, but...
I started 5 minutes late.
Okay.
Definitely have 5 minutes.
I'll take another 5 minutes. I'll take another 5 minutes and take that 5 minutes to state at least the other the other results. So this gives you a corollary of this is that you have at the Hochschild. So if this pair has the property, then the Hochschild homology of perf of x mod g completed as some semi-simple parameter is the Hochschild homology of perfect complexes on the fixed points, also completed at the parameter, and the same is true for negative cyclic homology. And if x is smooth, then the same is true for cyclic homology and periodic cyclic homology. So you wouldn't expect this to be true in general because the completion involves a limit. So we maybe aren't so surprised when it commutes with negative cyclic homology, which involves a limit. But both of these involve colimits, so well, it's just not going to be true in general. But there's some boundedness that guarantees it in this case. So this is really an accident. This is not something general.
Right, that's the right-hand side. So right-hand, writing x z mod g z completed at z.
So what it means is this thing is a module over Hochschild homology of bg, right? Which is g invariant functions on g.
Yes.
So you can take the conjugacy class right of a semi-simple element, which defines a closed point. Right, so z is also, it's the same. Z is an element of the stabilizer.
Yeah, but inside the parentheses, you already fixed z. So, and then it's still completed. So.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm not sure what the procedure completion means.
Right. So z is a, right, so this thing sits over perf, sorry, sits over k. Well, this sits over GZ, double mod GZ. Yeah, and there's a point. Yes, yep. Yeah. Okay, so, well, I guess what I want to say is like, well, maybe that's a technical point, and I'm short on time, so I just won't say it. So let me just take my last moments on this board to at least state the second part of picture, so some Atiyah Siegel completion. Right, so there's a few parts to this. The first part, this one's not really due to me, but if x is a stack, then the global functions on the formal loop space of x, after I apply the Tate construction, this should just be the Durham cochains on x with complex coefficients tensored with this sort of two periodicity thing. So you have to be a little bit careful about tensoring, so because you have to tensor in the complete with respect to some topology. Let me just sort of sweep that under the rug for now. So there's sort of still a gap between this statement and this statement, which is when I complete at a parameter here, I'm really taking unipotent loops. So we need to relate somehow the functions on formal loops with functions on unipotent loops. Okay, so the technical theorem is that if I take functions on unipotent loops, and I apply the Tate construction, and then I take functions on formal loops, and I apply the Tate construction, then I get an equivalence. And the sort of canonical example to think about is to take x to be SL2 mod the unipotent cone, g to be SL2, right? Then x mod g, this is just BGA. So loops of x mod g is GA cross BGA. And it sits over SL2 mod SL2, but it kind of sits over it sits over the identity in SL2 cross SL2. So in particular, when I take the formal, when I take the unipotent loops, I guess I just get polynomial tensor O of BGA, which is sort of polynomials in a degree 0 and a degree 1. So this thing has degree 0 and this thing has degree 1. But if I take formal loops, I get something different, which is I get a power series in x and just polynomial in eta. So what happens, though, is when you turn on the S1 action, S1 action will send eta to x, and then in the sort of periodic complex, they'll sort of kill each other off. And okay, so the upshot of this is the following, which is a statement. So if x is smooth and quasi-projective, and g acting on x is reductive, then the periodic cyclic homology of perfect complexes on x mod g completed at a parameter is equivalent to the Drom cochains on the fixed points with complex coefficients, two periodic. I guess there's a sort of completion issue to worry about, but there's no time to talk about it. We just end here.
Great. How about some questions? Can I ask about some more aspects of the couple?
Sure. I mean, yeah.
You started with some intervening threads, kind of standard specialistic Ginsburg theory. Then you wanted to say that somehow you want to at least some kind of
categories. Right. So I did a little bit of a switch. There's sort of a late hiccup, I guess. But so I guess the second part is mostly supposed to explain how the equivariant localization picture fits into would fit into such a categorical lift. The theorem as so I think in the very beginning I wrote this theorem, where I wrote HH, something like, you know, I wrote something like HH of like this modules embeds into some category, right? So the point is like, the thing that's like still in progress is to identify this thing and show that it has something to do with affine Heck algebra. So we had some argument which didn't quite pan out. This is Steinberg. Yeah.
And sort of derived Steinberg. I mean,
well, derived Steinberg. That's right. Yeah.
And so well, and So, so you have this embedding, you're saying, and then you want to say that. So is this all about sort of giving a different proof of? In the end of the day, this is supposed to give a different proof of this casualistic.
I don't know if it might not be really a different proof, but I mean, you can't get this kind of statement out of. It's just sort of trying to lift the bijection to some statement on categories. Right? So there's the lean loosestick is some statement about a bijection of simples in this category with simples in this category.
Yeah.
So, but there isn't actually like, you know, a functor that realizes this bijection. So that's the goal. It doesn't really provide a new proof because I think when we at least in the arguments we've been playing with.
But do you mean that this algebra is actually literally the Hegel algebra, or do you think it's something?
Well, you know, the original version of this talk, that's something I was going to claim, but I don't think I can claim it anymore.
it's plausible that it is.
It's plausible that it is, yeah.
Okay, and then you would be saying that you embed just the category of all modules, so the Hegel algebra, into here and sheaves and lattice graphs.
That's right. Yeah. But again, not quite claiming that officially.
That's the goal.
That's the goal. Yes. That is the goal. Yes. Thank you.